This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
The Adventure Jogger, a podcast about trail and ultra running. Meet fascinating runners from the front, middle, and back of the pack, sharing inspiring and funny stories about life and running. Running should be fun, and so should running podcasts. I'm your host, Ryan Pluckelman, and this is The Adventure Jogger. One of the coolest parts about my job interviewing runners is meeting really cool, fascinating new people on a weekly basis. And I'm very excited to get to know this runner. She runs for the Rabbit Elite Team. She won Angeles Crest 100. She's originally from North Carolina. She now calls California home. So she's, I would say, Beast Coast bred West Coast runner. We'll see her opinion on both sides of the aisle. Melissa Danahay is my guest on The Adventure Jogger. Welcome, Melissa.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. I love your show. It's so much fun. So when you reached out to me, I was just really stoked to talk to you.
And I'll say this, Melissa, I tried to schedule you before the move. And then I was like, oh, we'll be all settled by then. And then we had this incredible back and forth of rescheduling four times because apparently getting cable, I had moved in the longest time. Apparently getting cable set up is the most difficult thing ever. So thank you for being so flexible and not telling me to go F myself after I asked you the fourth time to reschedule. So thank you.
No worries. It actually worked out nicely because I was diagnosed with COVID. So I was recovering from that in the meantime. And the whole time I was like, oh yeah, I'll be fine to be on the show. I'll just, you know, do it from bed. And so it worked out because now I'm recovered and good. I've had some time.
Okay. Let's talk about that to get started, Melissa. So I know I've talked to various people and some friends of mine that have had it and said it wasn't much. There was, some people that have had it, it's like it felt like the worst flu ever and they wanted to die. All kidding aside, I mean, we've lost family members from COVID-19. How was your case of COVID?
Oh, it kicked my butt. my fiance got it too. And we found out earlier this month, it was like March 6th when we both got tested. And he was, you know, pretty out for about 4 days. He just slept right through and it was almost like a bad flu.
Yeah.
And then mine started off as mild. And then I ended up getting pretty sick to the point where I ended up having to see my doctor and I had like a secondary bacterial infection. So, but once I got on antibiotics, it was so much better.
Okay. Did it affect, are you back to running now, Melissa, after COVID?
I am, but it is a little bit slower. I can definitely feel, you know, my body's not 100% there yet, but overall, it seems like I'm back on track. You know, we were on the treadmill during our quarantine period,
yeah.
Because at, you know, some point I started to feel a little bit better once I was on antibiotics and, I'm not 100% there yet, but of course it's only been a couple weeks at this point.
Did you take precautions? Were you constantly washing your hands and wearing a mask everywhere?
Yeah, we were pretty much locked off in, you know, this part of the house. So we had our own entrance to the outside. And yeah, it was it was pretty rough. We just stayed in our room for the most part.
I don't know about you, but when the pandemic hit last March, like we went all in on the hand sanitizer. Like we had enough hand sanitizer for like a whole school right in our house. And I would constantly be putting on my hands. And then I realized about 2 weeks into that, I had the driest hands ever. They were painfully dry and cracked. And I'm like, oh, shit, maybe I've overdone it just a bit.
Maybe a little bit.
So Melissa, let's kind of get your running journey. I always like to start off my interviews with kind of letting people describe their journey into running. And I often say, you know, million ways to find this sport. How did you discover the sport of trail and ultra running?
I'm from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I grew up for the most part in North Carolina. Before that, my father was Air Force, so we actually traveled around a lot. I was born in California.
Oh, wow.
And then just somehow made it to the East Coast. And I just started running, just kind of taking on a hobby, a reason to lose weight in college. So that was actually like my first actual run was in college. I was just looking to lose some weight. And from there, it just kind of like naturally just evolved. I wanted to run more. I was running 5Ks, then I was running 10Ks, then I was running half marathons. So it started out as kind of road running primarily. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then a friend of mine was starting to get into ultras, and I trained with her, and she talked me into doing my first trail race, which was actually, it was probably my first trail run too.
Yeah.
And here I am running a 50K, you know, in this like, you know, all roots and trees. And, you know, it was just completely new, but I was just fascinated. And pretty much from there, I just wanted to run more and more on the trails.
So did you make the jump from road half marathon to trail 50K?
No, at that point I was training for road marathons. Okay. I was probably, I had run a few, you know, like okay. a handful at that point. So this friend of mine, she would train, you know, for marathons with me, you know, we were doing long runs mm-hmm. together. And so she was like, well, if you're running with me for this, why can't you run a trail race with me too? And here I am.
It's always that bad influence. Everybody has the bad influence in their life that tricks them. You know, it's like, oh, it's not that much farther, and you'll like it because it's quieter. And then, yeah, you get kind of wrapped up into it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like, come over to the dark side.
So being a military brat, you must have grown up just all over the country. You're in a base here for 3 years, a base there for 3 years. That's really quite a childhood experience growing up just about everywhere.
Yeah, it was interesting. I wish I remembered more of it. It was a lot of my early childhood. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, by the time that I think I was in middle school, we finally settled down and we weren't moving around as much.
And that was North Carolina?
We kind of like took roots down in North Carolina.
Okay. Was your dad stationed at Fort Bragg? Was that where he was at?
No, at that point he had left the military. Okay. So he was, yeah, he had completed his service. And so he was out by that point, you know, probably pretty early in my childhood.
Now, I live in an army town right now, and all my really good friends are military. Jeff Stafford is retired 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. There is actually an Air Force group attached to Fort Campbell. They're TACPs, which they actually, they're combat controllers. Really interesting job. Look up TACPs. It's really pretty cool. But another friend of mine's a Green Beret with 5th Group, and they always throw around the term Chair Force. And I think it's because they're jealous that the Air Force treats their people a little better than the Army, and they get a little nicer housing and stuff. I don't know if your dad ever experienced that insult before, or if you've ever heard that. But yeah, I'm sure your dad would get a chuckle out.
Yeah, that's the first time I'm hearing that. I'll have to ask him about it.
Just say, Dad, anyone ever say to you, Chair Force? Yeah, you get a little friendly rivalry between the services. So you experience this Trail 50K, and it changes your running at that point. It kind of opens up a whole new world to you.
Oh yeah, definitely. I just, at that point I was just seeking out more trail mm-hmm. and there wasn't a lot. So at this point I was living in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is, you know, it's a pretty decent sized city, but a lot of the trail, I'm like air quoting this.
Yeah.
It was actually like just like bike paths and greenway. And so I was running that, but it wasn't quite the same for me. So here I am like venturing out, driving sometimes an hour and a half, going out to the mountains, and it just kind of grew from there. And then around 2013, I came out to California, stayed for a week in Los Osos, which is near San Luis Obispo. It's between LA and San Francisco.
Yeah.
And just like completely, just all of my time was outside on the trails, and I loved it. And then 6 months from that time visiting, I ended up moving out there.
Really? What? Now, was there a part of you, because the trails are entirely different. When your Beast Coast trails, your North Carolina trails, it's a lot of rocks and a lot of roots and a lot. I mean, the mountains aren't that big, but they're brutal mountains. Did you get out to LA and California and go like, well, crap, if I knew trail running could not involve endless rocks and roots, I would have picked this up a lot sooner.
Oh, at that point, I was already in love with any kind of trail. So I definitely enjoyed the change of scenery. I think the biggest difference is when you climb a peak on the East Coast versus, you know, out here on the West Coast. On the West Coast, you can see, you know, you're at the top of the peak. Mm-hmm. In North Carolina, it wasn't quite that. Like, there was so much tree
cover.
Bunch
of trees, right?
So even though you were kind of at the top, you can't really see anything anyway.
Right. You put all this effort in to get to this beautiful, you know, crest, and you're like, well, there's a lot of trees around. I can kind of yeah, see
exactly.
But there's a whole lot of trees around. So yeah, I laugh and growing up in Wisconsin and calling Tennessee my home for the last 15 years, I'm pretty proud of the Beast Coast. And kind of my goal when I started the podcast, my first one around, was to just kind of bring some light to some different runners on this side of the Mississippi. But I'll be honest with you, I've run out west. And it, when you put that effort and you climb and you get to that peak and you're like looking around, there is nothing that compares to that feeling of just looking around and seeing the incredible thing that you've just conquered.
Oh, it's incredible.
Really good stuff. So when did you know, Melissa, that this wasn't just a hobby, that you weren't just an adventure jogger or hobby jogger, that this was something that you had some talent in and you could be competitive at it?
Oh, thank you for that. I still consider it as a hobby, but
you can't win Angeles Crest and be a hobby jogger. You can't.
I would say, yeah, it's definitely consumed more of my life. I think moving to California, it was very, very intentional. Like, I moved for the reason of I wanted to be in a place that, you know, kind of catered to my lifestyle, mm-hmm. and being out on the trails. And it was so accessible, you know, where I was in my new home, which was Los Osos, right outside of this beautiful state park, with just miles and miles of trail. So I would say the move was definitely a big jump for me. And it also just, I had a career change. So I went from working, you know, 65 hour weeks to a regular 40 hour work week, yeah. which is just a huge change too. And I think it allowed for me to have more time to be out there.
Okay, good, good. So, but at one point though, you have to have, there must have been a moment, a turning point where you knew that this wasn't, you weren't going to be a middle or back of the packer, that you could, through some additional training and what have you, move up to closer to the front of the pack. What was that turning point for you?
I would say it was when I was first starting to get into ultras. I'd run this trail race. I loved trails, but at the same time, I just loved running for hours and hours, mm-hmm. and it took up more of my time. And then I got into 24-hour racing for a few years.
Yeah.
And I just, for some reason, the mental part, it's really mentally challenging. It just clicked for me. So even if it was a 1 mile loop and you're running that for 24 hours, for some reason I was good at it. and I think the big turning point was I went to New Jersey for this one race. Mm-hmm. It's called like 3 days at the fair.
Yeah.
And I ended up running 113 miles. And so I think that was a pretty big turning point, because I was like, whoa, I came in thinking maybe I could get 100 done.
Yeah.
And I ended up knocking out 113 and still felt pretty good. I think that was probably the big turning point.
I'm always fascinated by the people that do really well in those 24-hour timed looped races, because, you know, half of the fun of trail running is this beautiful scenery, right? And I particularly love point-to-point races. I love the thought of if you're in a really shitty place, you can say to yourself, well, I'll never see that again. You know, like,
yeah,
you know, everything's new at that point. But the mental toughness required to see that same stump or that porta potty or whatever it is on that 1 mile loop, I mean, that's an entirely different mindset, an entirely different mode of running in a way.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's completely different. And for some reason, both of them seem to click with me.
Mm-hmm. Nutrition wise, what is there a difference between the two when you're constantly seeing the Twinkies that you brought sitting next to that chair? Is it a different nutrition game between the trail running and the timed track stuff?
I think with the 24-hour running, you get a little pampered because they usually have like a full service kitchen just because it is a small loop and you're going to the same like aid station. This one particular race, I mean, you could place an order for like an actual dinner order and then come back a couple laps later and it's ready for you. Like you could like say, hey, you know, I'd like a hamburger and some fries, and then you come back around and they have it ready. So it was like fine dining for the running world, these 24-hour races, where trail races, you're just, you know, drinking your nutrition, eating things like Twinkies, things that are packaged.
Really? You were able to stop and go, all right, I'll take the number 4 meal with extra ketchup, and then you run a couple laps, and it's ready for you.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what you all are thinking, but I'm thinking, I need to get me into one of them races.
Maybe that's the reason I loved it so much.
that's really fantastic. So you get into these 24 hours and then you find that you're good at these and then you get back into the trail world. Tell me a little bit about Angeles Crest, because this is an iconic 100 miler. And to get a W at one of these iconic 100 milers, that's not easy to do. You can't just do the Hal Higdon half marathon plan, show up in your favorite pair of shorts and go like, let's give this a whirl. How did that all come about?
Yeah, so I would say it started when, you know, in 2018, I got divorced. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started kind of dating again, and I started dating another runner. And this was a first for me. And he's not just any runner. He actually ran the Olympic trials last year.
Oh, wow.
For the marathon. Yeah. So he's a road guy. He's like mostly road. And so, you know, I started dating him, and we lived 90 miles from each other. So kind of long distance, not really. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, we connected through running. I met him at a running fundraising event. And here I am like watching him and like how structured he is with his training, how much he applies himself. His mental game was just so much on point, and he would give me these pep talks and I'd feel so inspired.
Yeah.
And so at that point, that's when I started to think, you know what? I've never applied myself in this way. I've never worked with a coach. So let's see how this goes. I'm going to sign up for a race, you know, bring on a coach and see what happens. And so I started training with Andy Kamita, who, you know, he's in LA. Mm. And what's great about him is he's run AC like, I think like 13, 14, 15 times.
Yeah.
He knows that race. He knows that course. He's been in ultra running scene for such a long time. And so I started training with him. And this was the first time I actually like really applied myself. You know, I followed a plan. I had someone giving me guidance. I was cross training. I was thinking about all the important things like nutrition and recovery. Mm-hmm. And also just the terrain I was running just to prepare myself for it. And I think, you know, for that reason, just because I was in such a good mental place, I was, you know, really working hard, that I was able to like kind of get the fruits of that,
right.
You know, and winning AC was definitely, you know, that was everything coming together.
That has to be just amazing. To like, at what point in the race did you say to yourself, like, oh, I might just be able to win this damn thing?
I think it was before the race. I came in.
Is that because, hang on, that's the cockiness of the fiance who ran the Olympic trials. He's rubbing off on you. You're walking and going like, I got this.
Oh yeah. He was telling me all kinds of things, but at the same time, I was working so hard and I was having so much success in my training runs, mm-hmm. That I just felt really good, you know, about what I could do at AC. And, you know, at that point, I knew what I was coming into, and I had kind of my goals, and it, maybe it wasn't necessarily to win, but I felt really confident going in. So I considered maybe I could place in the top few spots. Who knows? Let's see what happens. But all I know is I put in the work. I'm ready. You know, my training just went so well to where I felt like everything was clicking, and it did for me.
Have you always been that way? Have you always had that mental attitude of, I got this? Or was that a new thing for you?
I think in a way I've always had it. And I think that's what led to a lot of, you know, me continuing to run ultras and really get into it. And like this 24-hour racing, I just started to recognize the mental aspect and how successful I was at that, to where I could bring myself from the lowest point physically and mentally and then somehow bounce back and be fine like an hour later after just like refueling a little bit and sitting it out.
I've never had that mental attitude. It's always the night before I'm like, oh shit. You know, the race sneaks up on you and you're like, I've got time. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh God, it's next week. You know, it's that terror, but it sounds like you don't have the terror, Melissa. You have the, I've got this. Let's knock this out of the park.
Not all the time. There's been races like that where I'm like, oh crap, I'm not ready for this. but AC was one that I was ready for. I had been preparing for a long time for that race.
Did everything go smoothly that race, or were there some downs?
Oh yeah. I every single race I have, there's always just this one point where I'm just completely broken down. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing is, you know, after all of the experience of the years of running and training and going through things like this, I'm able to kind of bring myself back out. Whether it's just like you kind of have to like pull the emotional part out of it and do like a systems check.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what's actually going on? You know, do I just need to rehydrate? Am I fueling incorrectly? You know, what do I need to adjust? And sometimes it's maybe just, you know, kind of like stopping all the negative thoughts, saying, you know what, this is not getting me anywhere. Let's get out of this funk and just remember why I'm here. And so, with AC, it's a hard race. It's brutal. You're running, through these mountains, and it's August, it's summertime, and you're dropping into these like these canyons that are just, you're just cooking.
Yeah.
I think the biggest challenge was I reached multiple points where I realized I couldn't eat anything. I wasn't able to even like. I didn't have the appetite, but also my stomach just wasn't agreeing with me.
Yeah.
And so there were a couple points early in the race, you know, when it was really hot, that I switched to like liquid nutrition and that really got me through. And then, you know, just the mental part of it too, of just running in the mountains that long. And it's a pretty treacherous course. You're summiting two major peaks along the range. And so I think there were a lot of low points, but I think that's something that happens in a lot of these long trail ultras is you are going to reach them, but it's just knowing that you're going to be able to pull yourself out.
Now, I did read somewhere, Melissa, that you are an advocate for women survivors of violence, that you experience that in your own life. Does that play in at all to your mental toughness? Is there a thought like, I survived this trail is nothing?
Oh, absolutely. I think running has, and maybe that's the reason why running has just been such a, you know, important part of my life, is because it in a way helped me overcome my trauma. So, you know, for those who are listening, I experienced a sexual assault back in 2006. And it's been quite some time. But, you know, at the time, I didn't really understand trauma. I didn't understand PTSD. But for some reason, I gravitated toward running. And running seemed to be a way to provide a level of therapy, to where I felt like I was empowering myself. I was, you have kind of like, you're getting control back in your life through your running. And so, and then at the same time, nature also provides a kind of a therapeutic aspect too. Mm-hmm. And so here I am gravitating to this, you know, which I'm really grateful for, because there's two different directions that you can get pulled in when something like this happens in your life. You know, I've seen people go the other direction, you know, they're going to alcohol and drugs and other things. Very fortunately for me, I was gravitating toward running and just recognizing how much good it was bringing. And so I just developed this really good relationship with running as a result, because it was helping me. I didn't even know at the time. Now that I look back, I'm like, oh yeah, this totally makes sense. And so I think because of, you know, having gone through trauma, and having gone through like such a hard thing in my life, I think, yeah, it does give you a little bit of perspective of when you're running and, you know, you're running a race and something bad happens. It's like, well, it could be a lot worse. You know, look at all these other great things in my life. Look at how strong I am and how much I've already overcome. Mm-hmm. This is nothing.
Do you recommend, I mean, is this something that you recommend for women that have experienced that? is running something that you're like, you know what, you may want to give it a try because it's empowering and it may just give you some power back.
Yeah, I try not to just necessarily not like push people to running per se, but just finding that thing that just that does bring power to you, whatever it may be. It could be rock climbing, it could be music, it could be anything, but it's a matter of just finding the thing that gives you kind of like a level of peace, but at the same time, like that's like satisfying you in a way where it's like bringing some kind of important thing back to your life. I wouldn't, you know, I do talk about running and what it's done for me personally. And I always hope that somebody will try it out and maybe experience the same thing. But at the same time, you know, I try to tell people to just find whatever it is, whatever it may be that works for you.
One of the things that I've found as I get older as a man, Melissa, is how clueless I am to the female experience. You know, I'm the father of two wonderful daughters. I've got a son as well. And I have an incredibly strong, wonderful wife who is just, I just adore. I adore her strength. I mean, she is a strong woman that's been through some shit, and she is just tough, and I absolutely love it. But I've realized as I get older, I am so clueless to that female experience. You know, I think there's a tendency for a lot of us to assume that our experience is the ultimate experience of the universe, right? The way that we perceive things is the way other people perceive things. And the way that we navigate this world is the way others navigate this world. And I was clueless to how much sexual violence and sexual assault and just sexual harassment is out there towards women. And I think there's two ways men react to that. One is, what? This is ridiculous. You can't just say hi to some woman and then all of a sudden she's going off saying sexually harassed. They can overreact like that. Or you can sit there and go, oh God, oh my God, what can I do to not perpetuate that world that fosters that sort of atmosphere, and how can I help? And trail running, especially over the last year, a lot of things have come to light. There are great race directors out there that go out of their way to make sure that women feel included and safe. Jason Green is one of them. Jenny Baker is another one. She has this great thing called She Ventures. Please, ladies, Google She Ventures. It will change your life. My daughter went there. It was one of the best experiences of her life. Do we have a problem, Melissa, in trail running and ultra running in general? Is it? I know there are those RDs that really do make it a great place. And Jason's one of those guys that proudly points out the fact that more women participate in his races than men. But is there a problem, Melissa, that you see? And what can us guys do to make this space a better place for women?
Oh, first of all, that's so great that, you know, you kind of recognize this and how polarized it is. And I think there's always room for improvement. I think there has been a lot of positive change when it comes to a lot of different things. You know, my assault experience that I had in 2006 and the way that, you know, the police and the detectives interacted with me, it was so different from the way things are now. I think there's been a lot of, you know, movement, positive movement in that direction to where, you know, now police officers are getting training so that they're more trauma informed. And, you know, just there's more light being shed onto it. So I think there's a lot of positive change. And then the same thing with the trail world too. You know, the females are definitely underrepresented in this field, but I see it continuing to change. I see a lot of really great female athletes starting to like come out and just really tear it up. You know, they coined the term chicked, right?
Yeah.
Because it's almost like when you're getting to that ultra distance, it almost levels the playing field a little bit.
It does.
And I think people are starting to recognize that. And, you know, there's so many strong, resilient women out there who are just like really shining in this sport. And I just love the direction it's going. I don't think there's any things, you know, specific per se that needs to change.
Yeah.
But I think we're moving in the right direction.
That's good to hear. Because if you would have said like, it sucks, stop it, it would have been so discouraging. But I'm glad that there's progress being made. We are not saying it's perfect. We are not saying problem solved. Okay, everybody on to their business. There's still work to be done, but I'm glad that things are moving in the right direction. And you know, you're talking about your experience in 2006 and just how attitudes have changed. You know, I mean, God, there was a time when a woman would experience sexual violence and one of the questions would be, well, what were you wearing? Mm-hmm. Like that was like what you're wearing has anything to do with it. And I'm glad to see that more and more people, and men especially, are like, shut the fuck up with that stupid, what the fuck were you wearing? That has nothing to do with it. You know, and the world is changing more in that direction.
Yeah.
So all of that said, to learn about that, to get a great advocate, you did point out about how there are incredible women athletes that are now being thrust into the spotlight. One of those was Liz Canty, who I had a chance to interview just a couple of days ago at the recording of this podcast about her incredible experience at Barclay. So things are moving in the right direction, which is a very good thing. But what about you? You've got future plans now. You are on some radars. You are no longer this, I can just show up at a race and no one's going to know. You have a target on your back, Melissa. What do you expect? We've talked about the past. Now let's talk about the future. Where do you want to take this talent, this energy, this potential?
Yeah, I definitely miss being the underdog. yeah, things have definitely changed. So, you know, I actually, COVID was kind of a mixed blessing for me just because I was having hip issues. Mm-hmm. And so this gave me some time to actually go and have hip surgery done.
Yeah.
So at this point, you know, I'm back to running. I'm recovering from that. I've always wanted to run Western States. I mean, even from when I was on the East Coast, I knew about that race. It was on my radar. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to being in the lottery again. I would love to run that. I think that would be like just pivotal for me. And it'll happen, you know, hopefully sooner than later. In the meantime, it's just running qualifiers for it. So I'm looking at like a Cuyamaca, that 100K race. Mm-hmm. So that's something I've always wanted to run. Javelina, which is a multi-distance, but I particularly the 100-mile distance would be wonderful. It's loops. I love running in circles.
Yeah.
It seems like a great mix of all the things I love.
So that, okay, so we're going to expect big things from you, Melissa. You're on everyone's radar now. Big things from you. We did talk earlier about how, you know, you were born and bred, you're trail running in the Beast Coast. That's where you got your trail running genes from, right? That's where you cut your teeth on the trails, right? And now you're living in the West Coast. Let's break down the two, okay? When it comes to trails, which coast has the better trails, the Beast Coast or the West Coast, Melissa?
Oh, I'm so biased just because, you know, I fell in love with California and I'm out here. I love the trails here. I love the Sierras. Just incredible. Sorry, guys. I would say like the West Coast has definitely won my heart. At the same time, though, you know, I haven't run, but just like a few small sections of, you know, the Appalachian Trail. I know there's a lot that I haven't seen. And so I'm, you know, going in with an open mind thinking that, you know, if I run that, maybe that'll change things for me. Who knows?
I want to say this. You navigated that question brilliantly, Melissa. And I'm going to tell you why. Because you said that the West Coast trails were better, but then you went on to say Appalachian Trail instead of Appalachian Trail.
Oh.
had you said, Ryan, the West Coast trails are better, but someday I might run that Appalachian Trail, you would be disowned by the Beast Coast. But you had a way of insulting us, yet bringing yourself right back into our heart with the way you said Appalachian instead of Appalachian.
Which one's the correct way to say
Appalachian.
It?
Appalachian. That you said it right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's. I have a friend of mine. He grew up in West Virginia, real close to the Appalachian Trail, and he said you can tell out of towners by the way they say the name of that trail. It's not the Appalachian Trail, it's the Appalachian Trail. And he actually has a shirt that says it's Appalachian and it's spelled out that way. So that was a solid 1-2 punch. Melissa, way to go. Okay, food. Where's the better food? Beast Coast, West Coast. And you can't use the Appalachian.
I never thought on the East Coast, I wasn't crazy about Mexican food and but moving out here in California, I would say the West Coast might have you guys beat. The Mexican food is fantastic. The produce, a lot of the fresh produce that's out here just tastes so much differently. There's so much more flavor to strawberries and avocados and all of these things that I wasn't really quite used to on the East Coast.
But she did say Appalachian, everybody. So that we're gonna give you the Appalachian pass on that again. People, what about the people? Nicer people on the Beast Coast, nicer people out west.
I would say both. I would say both.
You're Switzerland,
and I think a lot of why I've had such great experiences out here on the West Coast is because I've lived in more rural areas. So Los Osos is a small town. Everybody in town knew me because they always saw me running around. And so they're like, oh yeah, the girl is always running out here.
Yeah.
So I think because of that, just the small town feels of, right now I'm in Goleta, which is just outside of Santa Barbara. So it's a little bit of a bigger city, but still relatively small. So I would say the people here are great too. But I've been to LA a few times and it's a little bit different there.
Gotcha. Okay. This is going to be an easy one. This is going to be an easy one to play to the home crowd, Melissa. Taxes. Taxes better on the Beast Coast or on the West Coast?
Oh, East Coast.
That was a softball.
We're paying the price for living out here. It's a palm tree tax.
When you go home, your friends probably bring it up Melissa lives in California. How can you even afford to fly out here with them taxes being so high? Your brother probably gets brought up all the time when you come back back east, Melissa.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. Listen, when you summit a mountain here on the Beast Coast, all you see is trees. When you summit the mountain on the West Coast, you get to see these beautiful views. But at least our taxes are cheaper.
Right.
what is one race where you're at that everybody needs to try and put on their radar?
Oh man, I would say if you're ever gonna venture out here, I love all of Luis Escobar's races. I don't know if you're familiar with Luis Escobar. Yeah. He was in the book Born to Run. He was the photographer.
Yep.
And he is a race director now and holds just this wonderful series of all kinds of different races, different distances, different areas too. I would say any of his races, they're usually a little bit smaller, with the exception of he has this one Born to Run event out here. Yeah. That is one I just highly recommend. I go to it every year I can. And it has, it's basically like a running festival. Everybody's camped out, he calls it the ranch, and everybody's just lined up with their campers, their tents, and there's events going on, there's competitions. And then meanwhile, people are just running. There's a 4-day event, there's a 3-day, there's 100-mile. The majority of people run just events on Saturday, the 10-mile race or the 30-mile race, and then you're done and you can go party and have fun and listen to music. But then some people are just out there all day and all night, just, doing these loops. They're 10-mile loops. Mm-hmm. And I would say any of his races are just great for the people, for the intimacy, and just Lewis also, he likes to make you suffer a little bit. So his courses are usually a little tough too, but that makes it fun.
Now, the book Born to Run at the Born to Run races, does Christopher McDougal show up and just randomly talk shit about Dean Karnazes, like in the book?
I didn't hear any of that, but he was at one of the events and he shot the gun, you know, at the starting line. And then, so that's the neat thing too, is a lot of these folks like Scott Jurek, you know, they'll come out to these events too. And then some of the Taro Amaro come out and run with us also, which is just incredible.
That's real. You know, it's kind of funny because I think there's like two books that it will bring somebody to trail and ultra running. Dean Karnazes is Ultra Marathon Man. And let me just, I want to reiterate, I love Dean. I'm a huge fan of Dean. And I thought it was uncalled for when McDougal was talking shit about him in Born to Run. I didn't think it was even necessary for the book. I thought it was like, okay, well, the book didn't, that wasn't necessary. And I think a lot of people hate on that guy because he was the first person to do it, right? He wasn't the first person to run ultras, but he was the first person to say, you know, people may want to hear about this. I'm going to write a book about it. And I think anytime someone's successful, there's some hate. He's a really solid guy. One of the best interviews I've ever had. I love Dean, and we're going to have him on again at some point. But people will find that book or they find Born to Run. And a lot of people will find both together. Did you grab one or the other? Was there a book that was important to you?
I've read both, okay. And I thought they were both wonderful. And so I didn't even pick up on that like tension, because I think Chris McDougall also was kind of talking about Ted, Barefoot Ted,
yeah,
and giving him a hard time. But yep. I think they're buddies too. So
right.
I didn't pick up on that tension of any sort. I think it's just people loving the same thing just, you know, kind of gravitating toward each other.
I have found that there is some, and I'm not going to go into details because I don't want to spoil anyone's secrets, but I have found that there is a little bit of drama. there is like some drama between, like, I'll give you one. I interviewed Gordy Ainsley a couple of years ago, and Gordy is an interesting interview. I mean, he is a character. And I kind of thought, I look at Gordy as kind of the patriarch of the West Coast, and Laz, Gary Cantrell, as the patriarch of the Beast Coast, right?
I see that.
Yeah. Well, apparently Gordy does not like Laz because Laz said something in a message board years ago, and they said, and he's still holding that grudge. I said, I'm like, hey, you and Laz ever hang out? He goes, I don't like that guy. He said something in a message board years ago.
Oh boy.
Like, okay, I'm leaving that off the list of things to bring up next time I talk to him. Not gonna have that going on. But yeah, so it's interesting all the way around. So definitely try the Born to Run races. Luis Escobar. Yeah, I think if you're doing a Luis Escobar race, you're not gonna be disappointed. That's not gonna be one of those races where you show up and go like, what? There's no food at the aid station? You ran out of water? What's that? You're gonna have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now that you've had COVID, you know, and you're probably going to, I hope you get vaccinated soon, and hopefully all of us do when we get back to the real world. Is there one specific race? You said Western States before, but so besides Western States, there's something that, like, how are you looking to round out your 2021 race-wise?
I would say Javelina.
Okay,
Javelina is just one that it's held usually right around Halloween. It's kind of like a running festival style environment too, where everybody's dressed up in costumes and, you know, there's base camp and everybody's just kind of doing their thing. There's a lot of excitement and energy around it. And then as a runner, you're kind of having to run through that again and again, which also can be a challenge because it's like, there's a party going on. I don't have to be running right now, but I'm still doing it. But I think the whole experience itself, even if I'm running for 100 miles, it's still something I want to see, just because I've heard so many good things about that race. It just looks like a lot of fun.
Any plans to race back here on the Beast Coast anytime soon?
Yeah. Funny thing is, you know, with Barkley just having happened, the Barkley marathons, I was actually joking around with my fiance of like, you know, that, you know, people have made comments to me over the years saying, you should try the Barkley marathons. You should do it. And I always kind of roll my eyes at them like, yeah, right. That's not a type of race I want to do. But I think after, you know, the years that I've spent running 24 hours and then being able to just like push through a brutal course like AC, I kind of want to run it now. But my fiance is like, you've got to take like orienteering classes or something. There's got to be something you can do because apparently my navigation skills are not that great. And I think that's pretty important in a race like that. But hey, you know, there's got to be some kind of class out there where I can just like learn how to, you know, maintain sense of direction and read a map and a compass.
Listen, YouTube videos, you just got to watch like how to orienteer on YouTube and get a compass. And then, you know, watch all of Jamil Corey's videos out on the Barkley course and you'll be a pro. I will say the funny thing about Barkley and the fact that the iconic documentary, there's been a lot of them, but the one, The Race That Eats Its Young, because that's on Netflix, a whole lot of people will stumble upon that just because it's just so fascinating. And then like family members who don't run, they'll hear like you ran a 50K and they'll go, you should do that Barkley marathons.
Yeah.
And they have to go, there's no way in hell I could do Barkley. I wouldn't last an hour out there. I'd be dead. I'd be the first person to die.
Yeah. And then there was a lot of that. A lot of friends who don't run, who saw that and they're like, why aren't you doing that? And it's like, well, there's so much more to that race that you don't know about. Like it's different. It's kind of like this whole new type of running. But anyway, over the years, it's just like, maybe all of their like suggestions are just starting to like creep up on me.
Creep up
like,
in your
well,
noodle.
Maybe actually I could do this.
If anyone's looking for some solid entertainment, go on Reddit and go to the running subreddit, not the trail running, not the ultra running subreddit, because it never fails. Every year, someone will post something about the Barkley marathons on just the general Reddit or the running subreddit. And there's always a couple of douche nozzles that are like, that's not even a race. Don't post that in running. That's hiking. Those guys are doing a 16-minute pace. That is not running. It does not belong anywhere on this Reddit. It brings great entertainment because it's like clockwork every single year.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. They just don't get it.
No, it's one of those things. If you don't get it, you don't get it. If the yellow gate doesn't mean anything to you, you just don't get it. Melissa yeah. Danahay, that was a fun talk. Thank you for being so flexible. You couldn't have, you could have left out the COVID part and just been like, yeah, I was, you know. So I'm glad you made it through, and thank you for rescheduling me 5 or 6 times. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. It was great talking with you.
All right. Go to theadventurejogger.com. All the episodes are right there. There's gear as well. T-shirts, joggers, all that good stuff. Check it out. We are 100% listener supported. You can make a monthly pledge on our Patreon page. Just search The Adventure Jogger on Patreon or go to theadventurejogger.com. Join the community on Facebook and Instagram by searching The Adventure Jogger. And subscribe to The Adventure Jogger wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss a single episode.